organizers for the opportunity to give a talk here. So I'll start off with well-known algebra here. The Kunth algebra O2, you can describe it as the universal C-star algebra generated by two maps, S1 and S2, which satisfy these relations. So this can be also viewed as the C-star algebra for a certain directed discrete graph, so just two loops on a single vertex. If we look at this graph, you can view it as a multiplicity 2 graph, and there is a certain multiplicity 3 directed graph which you can associate to this graph here, and it looks like this. So here we have a multiplicity 3 directed graph. We've had to pay for it by adding a few more vertices and edges. So the C-star algebra of this directed graph is the universal one, which is generated by 4 partial isometries. So the edges here correspond to partial isometries, and they satisfy this set of relations here. And these two C-star algebras are actually isomorphic. And to get a map from the C-star algebra, which is generated here by this directed graph into the Kunth algebra O2, we can just send the 4 generators here, the T sub I, to these elements in O2. And in the inverse of this map, it's a little harder to describe, but you can map S1 to the sum of these two partial isometries and S2 to some of these other two, and you can check that this actually defines a star homomorphism, which is an inverse to the first one. So here, just one thing to note, the map which goes from the multiplicity-free graph, well, the C-star algebra of the multiplicity-free graph to the original algebra can be described just on the generators. And here this map takes generators to the algebra which is generated by those elements. And if you were to write this out algebraically in terms of the matrices which are associated to these graphs, you can see that what's going on here is sort of one half of the process of shift equivalence. Okay, now to generalize this, I'll first have to make a digression into correspondences. So if you have two C-star algebras A and B, then a correspondence from A to B is the script E here is a right Hilbert B module, and A acts on the left by bounded adjoinable operators on this Hilbert B module. And there's a set of operators in the adjointable ones, the two-sided ideal, which is generated by the analog of the rank 1 operators in the case where the C-star algebra B is the scalars. And there's a few ideals here which are of interest. One is the ideal in A, which is the inverse image of the ideal of, I'll just call them the compacts on this module. A homomorphism of correspondences is a pair of maps, so pi, which will be a map on a star homomorphism on the C star algebra level, and T, which is a linear map from the Hilbert module script E to the Hilbert module script F. And we have these structure preserving conditions here. So the B valued inner product here is just the same as pi of the A valued inner product in script E via the linear map T. And the left action, well, you can basically view this as a module map. So any morphism like that of correspondences yields a star homomorphism from the ideal of the compact maps on script E to the compact maps on script F, and it's basically the only thing which makes sense to write down here. So it takes this rank 1 map to the one which is shifted by T. A morphism between correspondences is called co-isometric on an ideal K of A if K lies in this ideal of A, which is the inverse image of the left action on the compacts of E, and we have this relation here. So the morphism or the star homomorphism which is induced on the level of the compact maps on the modules satisfies this condition. So whenever you have a left multiplication, well, a left action here which sits inside the compact and you apply psi of T here, then that's the same as mapping A to the C-star algebra B, which is the one which acts on F, and applying the left action there. And a useful correspondence to have is the identity correspondence on a C-star algebra. The inner product, which is A valued here, is just given in that sense. And then a representation of a correspondence in a C-star algebra B is the same as a morphism from the correspondence to the identity correspondence over B. And here the rank 1 maps in this correspondence have a straightforward form, So this map, psi of t, where t is a linear map of the module into a C-star algebra, is just given by this. So theta of x comma y goes to tx times the adjoint of ty. Now there's a nice universal property for morphisms of correspondences. So if we start off with an ideal K in A, where script E is a correspondence over the algebra A, and we're given a representation. I'll talk about the universal one. So if we have a representation of the correspondence in a C-star algebra, there is one which you can associate with this ideal K so that the representation is co-isometric on this ideal. And you can fill in this arrow here. So this is a universal representation of a correspondence which is co-isometric on an ideal K. And if K is the empty set here, then you're used to calling this the triplet C-star algebra. An important ideal, which was identified in general by Katsura, is this ideal which is the inverse of the compact acting operators here, J of the module E, which are perpendicular to the kernel. The sort of Kuntz Pintner C-star algebra of the correspondence is the one which is a universal C-star algebra which corresponds to the ideal J sub E here. there's a subalgebra of this universal one, which is generated just by the image of T. So T of E here is a linear subspace of this C-star algebra, and if you look at the C-star algebra it generates, you can check that this is an ideal. And it also has a universal property. I'm interested in this C-star subalgebra, and to show that it has a universal property, I can identify, well one way to do that is to identify it with a certain universal Kuntz-Pintner algebra for a specific correspondence. And we do that as follows. If we're given any correspondence over a C-star algebra A, I look at the closed span of the inner products which come from the module. This is a closed two-sided ideal of the C-star algebra A, which I'll denote throughout this by capital I. The inner product on the module clearly takes values in this ideal. So I restrict the left action of the correspondence to this ideal and form a new correspondence, which I'll call the restricted correspondence. I'll use R of E soon, but here I've called it E restricted to the ideal I. And you can show that the C star algebra, which is generated by the image of T in the Klimt-Pinsner C star algebra, is the same as this Klimt-Pinsner algebra for the restricted correspondence. So that automatically gives you a universal property for this ideal. And if you look back at Pinsner's original paper, this is the C star algebra he was working with, and when he threw in the algebra A, he called it the augmented algebra. So, but everybody has dropped this word augmented, so it's probably useful to say the unaugmented Klimt-Pinsner algebra for the correspondence. Okay, so a class of examples of correspondences comes from topological quivers, and I'll explain what those are. They're basically a topological version of a directed graph. Okay, so if you write down all the information, capital E, capital X here are topological spaces, R and S are maps from capital E down to X. You think of them as the range and source maps, and lambda here is a measure. R and S are, so the range and source maps are continuous maps, R is specified to be open, and lambda is a family of measures on the fibers over the base X, where you're viewing R as your map from E down to X.
Can I just ask about terminology? Of course, what it means too, but if you just say ordinary quiver, then my impression is that that means there are two issues. Either it means directed graph, or it means representation of a directed graph. And in the present setting, it seems that you mean using the issue of directed graph.
Yeah. Well, I myself would have, but this terminology is in a paper of Muley and Tom Forda, so I just adopted their terminology, and they have reasons which come from algebra to actually call these quivers also. Yeah, there is something called a topological graph, but it was perhaps prematurely called that. I myself would have called these things topological graphs.
But it sounds like you have to get into the gritty details to sort things out, what actually is the same or different from that.
Yep, yeah. So, as I mentioned, these were introduced and studied in a paper by Muley and Tom Forda a few years ago. And I myself had been interested in these types of structures, and I had about a month or two before this preprint came out had a paper where I basically have the same type of structure, except E, so my space of edges, was specified to be a closed subset of X cross X. So basically, If you look at what this means in terms of graphs, these are multiplicity-free directed graphs in a topological setting, or multiplicity-free quivers. And I remember telling Paul, I said, well, I guess your animals are a lot more general than the ones I introduced. And he just mysteriously said, well, that's not clear. We don't know. So this work here is an outgrowth of trying to rescue my idea here of a topological relation and to make the relationship between these two a little clearer. So to a topological quiver, you can associate a certain correspondence. So you look at the continuous functions with compact support on the edge space, define an inner product here which takes values in the C star algebra of continuous functions on the locally compact space X vanishing at infinity, and you can use the measures to do that. And the left action is just given by the induced map on the top on the function spaces by the source map, so I'll call the induced maps here with an upper sharp, and the right action is given by the induced map by the range map. So this gives you the structure after you complete this in this norm given by this inner product. This gives you a correspondence over C naught of X. And rationale for doing that is if E and X are discrete spaces, then paper of Fowler, Laca, and Rayburn had shown that the universal algebra for the ideal JE here is the same as the graph C star algebra. And this was if there were no sinks around. And I showed that for a general graph, you actually get the Kunz-Pimsner C star algebra. So this is the first time that this ideal actually showed up, as far as I'm aware, even though it had not been introduced in general yet. Okay, so you can look at ideals in A, which come from this correspondence, and the kernel of the left action comes from an open subset, which is called the sinks of the space X. The ideal JE here, the inverse image of the compacts under the left action, also come from an ideal, so an open subset of X called X sub finite here, or F-I-N. So these subsets were identified by Muley and Tomforda, and I'm interested in this ideal I of the C star algebra A, and you can show that the open subset that corresponds to is just the image of the range map. And remember, R is an open map here, so R of E is actually an open subset of X. And what we want to do here is look at these Kunz-Pimsner algebras, which come from topological quivers, and we'll put some conditions on the graph which will ensure that this process, which in the discrete case gives you a multiplicity-free graph and an isomorphic C-star algebra, actually works here in the topological quiver sense also. So given any topological quiver, we'll associate to it a topological relation, so in other words, a multiplicity-free topological quiver. Now the sinks here provide a big problem, and so we'll just call F the sinks which are in the restricted correspondence. Okay, so this is the image of E inside the sinks, and you can show that this is just this open set, so the complement of the closure of the source map in the range. And the first slide we had where we took a multiplicity, well, a directed graph with multiplicity, you can see that that's basically a version of the edge graph. You can do the same type of thing here in the topological situation. First of all, I'll take the closure of the sinks in the range. Okay, that's an open set. I take its closure inside the range of E only. And I'll form the disjoint union of the edge space with this closed set. And I'll define a map sigma, which is just the source map on E and the identity map on the closure of F. So the multiplicity-free quiver, or the relation that I'll speak about, I'll use the sub or superscripts 1 for that topological quiver. So the new vertex space will just be this disjoint union of the edges with the closure of the sinks, and the new edges are just going to be the pullback of the range map from E to X and this sort of general source map from the new edge from the new vertex space. So this is just the paths EF, where the range of E is sigma of F. Okay, but F here can also be a vertex. And we introduce a family of measures in that following way. And the new range map, sorry, it should be R sub 1 here, is just the projection onto the second component, and the new source map is their projection onto the first component. Then you can show that this is a closed subset of the X1 cross X1, and that the new range map is also open. The new sinks is just the closure here of the old sinks, and you have to sort of find out where, because we're going to take the restricted correspondence of this new multiplicity-free quiver, we have to identify what the C-star algebra is. So we're going to be looking at C-naught of this disjoint union, which is just a direct sum of two abelian C-star algebras. So let's just look at an example here. If we have a single loop of multiplicity, the torus, on a point. Okay, so this is an example of a topological quiver. The vertex space here is just a point. The edge space is the circle, and R and S are just the maps of the circle to the single vertex. And lambda here is just R measure. If you form the multiplicity free quiver from this one, then you get the base space here is the circle, and the edge space is just the cross product of the circle with itself. So it's basically this rectangle with the edges identified, filled in solid. Okay, so this is an example of a relation, so a closed subset of X cross X here. And another one, if you just take the path space again of the circle between two points, so the source of every edge is a one point A and the range is another point B, then the multiplicity free quiver, which you get from that, it's just the circle here spread out, so the vertex A now becomes the torus, and from each point in the torus you get an edge into the vertex B. Okay. So again, you can see that's a multiplicity-free quiver. So we have the correspondences which you can associate with these two quivers. So one of them I've already mentioned here is the correspondence over the abelian algebra C naught of X. And here we get correspondence over the new vertex space X1. If we look at the restricted correspondences, so over this ideal, continuous functions on the range of E, and continuous functions, so S inverse R of E is an open subset of the old edge space. Right? R is an open map, S is continuous, so this is still a locally compact space. F bar here is a closed subset of a locally compact space, so it is also, so these things make perfect sense. And when we form the Kunz-Pimsner algebras of these two correspondences, we want to see when they're the same or when not. So under certain conditions on the topological quiver, we'll see that you get the same Kunz-Pimsner algebra. So this is sort of a topological version of the very first slide I gave, where you had a multiplicity two edge on a single vertex.
Can I just ask another question? Uh-huh. This isomorphism, in some sense, about the
For one of the maps, it's at a fairly algebraic level, so it corresponds to the words go to the words. But for the inverse map, we'll have to use the compact. So there's some sort of completion involved there. Well, certainly at you need more than just the words around. Okay. So the very first thing which one can do here is identify the restricted correspondence as a tensor product of two other correspondences. So our original restricted correspondence was one script E over the ideal I. I can extend the left action of I to a left action of the ideal I1 in the topological space. And I also view I1 itself as the trivial Hilbert module over itself with a left action by the ideal I. So this is an I1I correspondence, and this is an I1 correspondence. I can take the internal tensor product of those two over the ideal I, and you can show that you get the restricted correspondence of this multiplicity-free quiver. So we need this sort of tensor product decomposition to be able to define a map going the other way. Well, and also to define the very first map. Okay, now, if we've got a star homomorphism of, if A and B are C-star algebras, from A into the multiplier algebra of B, then I can sort of rescue or look at the part of that star homomorphism that maps A into B itself. So there's a certain part of A which will be mapped to B. I'll call this the proper part of a star homomorphism, and A sub P and B sub P here are two ideals of A and B. If I apply the map S, which goes from the edges to the vertex space X, the induced map on the function spaces, right, you see we go into the multiplier algebra of C naught of functions on E, and the proper part of that is star homomorphism where the open set X, which corresponds to the ideal A sub P here, is just the largest open set U, so that when you restrict S to that you get a proper map, and you can write it out in terms of its points in X that have pre-compact neighborhood whose inverse image is also compact. And I'll call a topological quiver proper if, when we intersect the range of the edges with the closure of the sources, we end up in this proper part of the vertex space. Okay, and remember, this is for the source map. Under these conditions, the map, the induced map on function spaces by the map sigma takes you from the ideal I to the new ideal I1, and remember, the edge space of the new quiver was defined as a pullback, so if we write out that diagram here, you can basically see that the correspondence you have, the new correspondence, is given by the left-hand side here. The old correspondence is given by the right side, or the original correspondence, and we have a pair of maps here. And you can show that this pair of maps actually defines a morphism of correspondences. So, because we're looking at induced map on functions, we get a map in the other direction. So the quiver that I gave you of an edge of multiplicity T on a single vertex, that's an example of a proper quiver. The space of edges here is compact, so everything's fine in that situation. And you can show that this K gives you a morphism of correspondences. It's injective, and it's co-isometric on the required ideal. And this then yields an injective star homomorphism of the Kunz-Krieger algebra of the restricted correspondence of the original quiver to the Kunz-Pinsner algebra of the multiplicity-free quiver. So we'll see an example of that at the end. I'll just use the same graph as before. So this corresponds to the straightforward map that we had on the first slide from O2 into the graph algebra of the more complicated looking discrete graph. So not much is needed to actually obtain the star homomorphism in terms of hypotheses. A little more is needed to get a map going the other direction. And we'll look again at the space of finite vertices. Remember, this was defined as the inverse image of the left action of the compact. And you can see that the left action acts by compact operators is equivalent to the range lying in this open space of finite vertices. And you can show that that's equivalent to just looking at the vertices which have both a range and a source, which are ranges and sources, sitting inside the finite vertex space. So we'll call a topological quiver which satisfies that, we'll call it range finite. So basically that means the restricted correspondence, the left action, acts by compact operators. So if we assume that, and then there's a topological assumption here that the open set of sinks in the range is actually closed as a subset of the range. So these two conditions here are enough to get a map going the other direction, which is an inverse. Now, just write out what this map is. If we're given any representation, I forgot to write it in here. Of the correspondence into a C star algebra B, then there's a list of that to a map of the correspondence for the multiplicity free quiver into B also. To see how to define this map, T1, Pi1, from the map T and Pi, you have to take a little closer look at these ideals. So remember, I1 is a C-star algebra over which acts, well, the correspondence is over this larger C-star algebra. It decomposes into two pieces here. The first piece acts via multiplication on the space of functions with compact support on edges as an element of the compacts, right? That was our part of our hypothesis. And we have a map on the compacts, which is induced by the linear map T. The second part here is an ideal of the original ideal I, so of the continuous functions on the range space. And then we can define a map Pi1 as this sum here, so we pi of The second element makes sense here because pi is a map of the ideal I, so we're just restricting it to the ideal C naught of F here. And here we're looking at the induced map on compact operators on the multiplication by the element B1. You can show that this map is a star homomorphism into the C star algebra B. To define the linear map T1, we look at our tensor product representation of the correspondence, and on simple tensors, G tensor H, we define T1 in this way. So this defines a linear map, which you can show is continuous, actually bounded by 1. So it extends to the closure, which is the restricted correspondence of the multiplicity free quiver. Then there's a few properties. If pi is injective, then you can show pi 1 is injective. If t pi admits a gauge action, then so does t1, then the lift does also. And if t pi is co-isometric on this ideal, which defines the Pimsner algebra, then this lifted map is also co-isometric on this ideal in the other space. And then you can show that diagram commutes. So we just have this identity here. So that we apply this to the universal representation T pi of the restricted correspondence into the Kunz-Pimsner algebra of the correspondence. And working out the diagram, which you can construct using all the universal properties, you get this type of diagram. So this composition is just this map T pi. So this map and this map are the same. So this composition gives you the identity, and that tells you that this induced map rho from the universal property is onto, and using A and B here, because the universal representation in the restricted correspondence, pi is injective, it admits a gauge action, so then the gauge invariant uniqueness theorem tells you that rho has to be injective. So that gives you your isomorphism. Okay, so this is an isomorphism not of the usual graph C-star algebras, but of the restricted graph C-star algebras. So it's the algebras which are generated by the edges only. Okay, so let's look at two simple examples here, just to show you that both of those hypotheses are needed. So the map here of multiplicity of circle over a point, that's a proper quiver, but it's not finite range. You can show that the Kunz-Pimsner algebra of this quiver is just O infinity. Its multiplicity free quiver, remember, is just a solid product space here, T cross T. Now, I had worked out what this Kunz-Pimsner algebra was earlier, and it turns out to be O infinity cross product and outer automorphism. You can show that this is a classifiable Kirchberg algebra, and its K theory is Z for both K0 and K1. which is, so it's definitely not isomorphic to O infinity. And here, another example, our vertex space is a circle, the edge space, again, is a circle, and we choose any point V here, fix it in the circle, and look at the edges, which is parametrized here by the circle, which start at V and end at an arbitrary point on the circle. Okay, so the source of this quiver is just a single vertex V lying inside the circle, and the range is the whole circle. Okay, so this is proper, it's actually finite range, but the topological condition that the sinks be closed in within the range isn't satisfied. Okay, now I didn't draw a picture of the edge space that you get here, so the multiplicity-free graph associated with this one. And you can work out after a little while what the K-theory of this is, and it's not the same as what the K-theory of this one is. Okay, so again, the Kunz-Pinchner algebras will not be isomorphic. Okay, so that's about it for now.